So, not too long ago, we lost the legendary manga and anime creator Akira Toriyama. I don't think I need to explain to you how much of an influence he was in mine and every other anime lover's life. But I want to do a tribute to him today for this episode. We really got to talk about him and his work, and let's talk about some other people that that really influenced us as much as he did.
Yeah, he was pretty awesome. Question: what's your favorite Dragon Ball Z saga? In his honor, for me, I think I liked the Android Cell saga. I think that was my favorite.
Yeah, that's kind of goated.
That was peak Gohan.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, usually I just immediately go to the Namek saga as
also
well.
Also goated.
Just because, I mean, that's the first time Super Saiyan happens and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And that was the start of beautiful tradition of Piccolo becoming powerful and immediately getting shut down.
Yeah, there's like, immediately. Oh, strong. Yeah, that was also the kind of the turn that Vegeta was becoming more of a on the side of the good guys, basically, stuff, because he was basically forced to. Otherwise, he would die by himself.
Yeah.
Hmm. Ooh, actually, I changed my mind. The, like, second Dragon Ball World Tournament saga was my favorite.
Oh, you're talking from the original Dragon Ball.
The World Martial Arts tournaments in Dragon Ball were definitely my favorite World
Martial Arts tournaments. Was that before or after Tien joined? Because I know in the beginning one, Tien was the enemy, and then Piccolo, King Piccolo, came up. But
yeah, I think
because he was on there. He was with him there. Yeah.
But there was the one before that Tien was, like, pretty much one of the main villains, because, you know, the Kreen school was kind of an ass.
Yeah. I love Dragon Ball.
That's where... Yeah, that was, I think, in one of the previous martial arts tournament, is where Krillin had to fight Chiaotzu and defeated him using math. Because Chiaotzu didn't know how to do math properly. And just, like, freaked his mind out, and then just made him lose concentration, and he just kicked him. It was just such a simpler time back then.
Mm-hmm. The power of math.
He's like, what's 5 plus 4? And then Chiaotzu has to go, 1, 2, then punch in the face.
Punch him.
If we're honest with ourselves, that's how you'd beat me in a fight.
John, spell this word.
Fuck you.
What are words?
So what's funny is so I was listening to like the soundtrack. I found out that there's people who like do recreations and their own renditions of like the themes and stuff like that. And as I was like going down, people did like the Japanese theme song, and some people did like harder metal covers of the American theme song. Awesome stuff. And Kelly, when you said the Cell Saga, that theme song goes so hard. It just has this like, look it up right now, pause this episode and go listen to Cell Saga theme, because when you hear it, like when I heard it in the car, I was just like brought back to just like the epic standoffs and just like the looming threat of Cell. Oh man, it was good.
Is that the one that's just like the da 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 da? It's kind of like the theme that happens when Perfect Cell basically like announces his plans to the world.
The one that I was talking about was it was more like an electronic piano or like flute or something like that. But just like the there's not much to it. It's just the composition of the music, just the way that they delivered it was good. He was certainly influential. I do want to talk about today. Are there any other influential figures that have passed that affected you perhaps as much or even more than Akira Toriyama? Whether it be movies or video game names or something like that.
Well, easy one for me off the top of my head is Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah,
that one hurt everyone deeply.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
Probably in the same vein of comedians, Gene Wilder. Because one of the first movies that I watched with him, well, obviously, was Willy Wonka and Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
Wait.
And he just kind of had this manic, like, humor to him in that entire movie. And then, like, watching all the other Mel Brooks films that he's been in.
When did Gene Wilder die?
Years ago.
I was going to say, yeah.
I think 2017, I believe.
Okay. So it was pretty recent.
Yeah,
in 2016.
It was, I can't exactly remember, but it was something that he was hiding again. It was like, yep, he died, and it was like, oh, wow, didn't know this was happening. Oh, keep it private.
I love that interview with him when he was like, the only I only agreed to play Willy Wonka if I could come out and do the cane and the trip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because
yeah.
Then you don't know what's.
Because he's inherently untrustworthy now. I'm like, damn, that's so good.
Yeah. He had reasons for the things that he did. He was certainly a genius in that way. Yeah.
And young Frankenstein or Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Frankenstein.
That's always a classic movie to watch.
I would say a similar vein of actors hiding things. Like how they're doing, I would say Chadwick Boseman. No one really knew how bad off he was.
Yeah.
But man, he's just such a. I mean, I feel like he changed the landscape for Marvel as far as like the fan base goes.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know so many people that were like they were into Marvel, but then they got really into Marvel once like the Black Panther movies came out. Like, I mean, so like incredible actor. He in his personal life was just a stellar guy.
He
would give like speeches at like colleges and stuff, and man, just look at what Chadwick Boseman college graduation speech. Like I would never recommend looking up a college graduation speech, right? They're always so boring. Maybe there's a few good ones, but look up a Chadwick Boseman college graduation speech. You will not be disappointed.
Yeah, I loved him as Black Panther, and like them retiring like Black Panther's character with his death is like objectively the right thing to do, but man, the arc of Black Panther falling in love with Storm from X-Men, leading to the Avengers versus the X-Men, was like the storyline that God I wanted so badly.
Oh, that would have been so freaking good.
Maybe they'll still do it, but like that was like in the comics. That would have been so freaking cool.
God, that would be a nightmare trying to put together, but
it's okay. I mean, they've already done the Infinity War, so I mean, they've already gotten 25 A-list actors.
Them introducing X-Men gradually has to lead up to X-Men versus Avengers. Like, that would be amazing. It'd be like Civil War, but bigger.
Wait for 10 years.
I think it was really funny, like, whenever you would ask kids have the argument, like, who wins? The Marvel, the Avengers, or the X-Men? It's like, dude, Professor X folds your whole team. And he's in a wheelchair.
Yeah, the only problem, it's like when you start going into that, though, then you're like, well, the Avengers also have, like, literal gods on their team.
Yeah, so you literally eventually just get to, like, the Scarlet Witch versus the Dark Phoenix.
I was going to say that I think that's what it's going to come down to ultimately is just the two nuclear bombs.
Yeah. The godlike entities. Yeah.
Yeah. I like to point out to people because they didn't really know like who Scarlet Witch was. And I'm like, she almost killed Thanos immediately.
Yeah.
Like it was almost, you killed my boyfriend, I'm going to kill you now.
Yeah, they basically and she almost had to like write her out of Infinity War so she didn't kill him before he got the stone.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just, they did it for plot reasons.
Yeah. For me, Chris Farley, the comedian, of course.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's a good one, too.
He has always been my favorite since I was a child. Still is. I just shit my pants with laughter watching Black Sheep and Tommy Boy and
classic
SNL skits of his. I mean, I don't think I've ever laughed harder.
Van Down by the River, say no more.
Yeah.
Wait, he was Van Down by the River?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh that is gosh. His skit. That's
you
like
you've never seen that skit before.
No, I've seen
Chris Farley.
I've seen that skit, but I don't know who Chris Farley is. Oh, so.
Yeah, that's him. Yeah.
Wow.
He's a fat funny man.
He's a fat funny man. He had so much charisma, and he had no shame, and he knew what his humor was, and he just did it.
He was literally the only actor who knew how to do physical comedy.
He was the king of physical comedy. Like, nobody mastered it the way he did. And, yeah, he's the peak. No one will ever beat him at his game.
Yeah. I mean, legends all around us, heroes all around us. That is why I am going to award you all with a hero point.
Yay! Oh my gosh.
And in remembrance of Akira Toriyama and all of the people that we mentioned. I think it's a good way to remember them is this hero point you just got.
Nice. So now, Kezra, you have to spend this and go Super Saiyan.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
You got your. I
did text you about that. I texted you, right?
I mean, that's right, basically what the spell Burning Dive is.
he is the most Super Saiyan out of anybody. He literally has a spare palm attack. We ended the last episode with Grimshaw. I believe you're slowed still, right?
Yeah.
Which means that this stone golem approaching you is going to lay into you in this in this moment.
Don't remind me. Like I was like, let's just talk about all our favorite all our favorite people and
let's talk about these dead people. I'd rather talk about these dead people.
Because Grimshaw is about to become one.
I should have led into that, but it would have really dampened Akira Toriyama's death. I don't care about you, but I care about Akira Toriyama. So the stone golem is going to go up, and he is going to he used a move action, so I think he's only going to get two attacks here.
Okay, that's right. Yeah,
I think so.
As he doesn't crit you.
I don't think that, yeah. Okay. He was slowed, so that's why he was only able to get so far. Okay. So, first fist attack. So he's gonna go up and he's just gonna swing massive stone hand, balled up fist on top of your head. Just
he's just insisting on a fisting.
Insisting on a fisting. That can't be the title of this episode. That is gonna be a 40 to hit.
Yeah, thankfully just a hit.
God damn,
that was a 5 on the die for a 40.
All right, that is 23 points of bludgeoning damage.
23 points of bludgeoning damage. So I imagine what happened is he was like checking on his friend, and then he just looks up and just gets pummeled into the ground and. It was a massive hit.
Massive
hit.
I forget, Grimshaw, he wears a full plate, right? So he has, like, a helmet and all that?
Yes, he does.
Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah.
Okay. But flavor-wise, he doesn't wear the helmet.
I was just thinking of, like, your bell being rung, literally.
Yeah.
Are you okay? The dent stopped, I think.
We recently did a rewatch of A Knight's Tale.
And, oh yeah,
you know, in the very beginning when he has to put on the helm and it's like dented.
Take off your helmet, sir knight, so we can see your face.
I can't.
Dented into my skull. I cannot do such a thing.
Alrighty. So he's then after hitting you, after hitting a slowed creature, he's then going to do something in which I need you to make a fortitude save, Grimshaw.
Oh no.
Uh huh.
All right. I'm not going to use this die.
No.
This die, I don't trust it tonight. At least not for this.
Not feeling it, huh?
Well, I should have trusted that die, because this other die wasn't any better for 25.
25. That is a fail. Which means you are paralyzed for one round.
Holy shit.
Oh, my God.
Just crunched your spine in.
Yep.
Thank God I didn't want to play the game.
Alright, so that is only a reaction.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And then it is a reaction to impose paralysis.
Oh my gosh.
So, second attack now.
Good to know.
24.
That's a miss.
That is a miss, okay. I assumed as much. You're still pretty tanky.
Yeah. Even though I am off guard now, my armor absorbs it all.
Got it. All right. So goes up and bonks you on the head, and you're paralyzed, and it goes to hit you again, but it manages to just kind of like tank it into your shield. Grimshaw, it is your turn. You are paralyzed.
Grimshaw contemplates his actions that led him to this point.
Hey, that means you can do a check.
That's true. Maybe. You want to do a knowledge check?
Actually, let's see. Can't act except to recall knowledge.
Yeah.
Nice.
So recall knowledge. Go ahead.
Okay. Sick. I guess I will use. Would a religion apply here?
Religion against the golem?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Nope.
Let me just try another knowledge.
It's a construct, so it's either.
Oh my gosh.
Either arcana or crafting.
I got another 5.
It might be made out of rock.
So that is a total of an 18.
That is a fail. You do not know anything about a golem.
Okay, I'm going to roll another knowledge check then, because I can just roll. I got 3 actions.
Sure, why not?
Golem hit roll hard.
I'll allow it.
Wait a second. Oh, no, I know. I was thinking maybe I could pray, but nah, I won't pray.
I was wondering that, because I was like, is that.
Yeah.
But
The gods can hear your thoughts, right? Like, you don't have to.
I don't know. Milani's been ice cold with you, though.
She has, yes.
That's true.
All right, so I'm going to roll a knowledge check on Lair.
Sure. Go ahead and roll society.
Yeah.
You can. You can't really figure out anything out about him, but you can figure out about the bruiser.
Maybe. Yeah, 25.
25, oh unfortunately God. Not.
Oh my gosh.
Man, rolling 25s over there.
Alright, I'm just gonna forego my last action.
Alrighty. okay, and now it comes to Lurb. Lurb is stuck to the ground with an arrow, is that correct?
Yes, he is.
Okay, so he needs to use one action to make a athletics check to pull it out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep, athletics. You gotta beat a 10. Can you beat a 10?
I didn't even know if I could fail with the natural one. Hold on.
You couldn't fail the natural one.
No, I
doubt it.
Yeah. No, because even if I rolled a natural one, it would still be above 10. Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, he did succeed, anyway. One action to do that. And then I guess he is going to try. All right, here's what he's going to do. Lurb is going to see Benson coming up, and he is going to try to run over to Benson and try to stop Benson from coming up against the golem. He's going to he wants the golem to do the work here on Grimshaw, and so he's going to use an action to actually it might have to be 2 actions. Hold on. Let's see. 5, 10, 15, 20, 25. So he just uses his last 2 actions, but he gets up to Benson. And so now he's staring Benson in the face.
Ooh.
It's a lot of man meat staring at each other right there.
Yeah, yeah.
You approach me.
Well, I can't beat the shit out of you from over there. Elkwood, your turn.
Okay. Let's see. Yeah, Lurb stepped out of his line of sight, so he has to maneuver over here. He's going to take a... come on. Just trying to use a lot of them. Step action.
Alright.
Makes a step, because Lurb is still his hunted prey.
Yeah,
and so he is... I mean, he's not the only dude jack shit against a golem. No,
but
if he can kill Lurb...
Dude,
you're pretty baller.
Anybody with the name Lurb has tried to commit mail fraud at least once.
You would know with the society check. There's a warrant out for his arrest on that one.
Oh, that 25 actually paid off.
It's like Lurb actually sounds like the guy that would be pissed off at like a company party or something like that.
That's like,
you can't have fun here.
Let me remind you that Lurb is also a slaver. He quite literally illegally mails people.
Oh yeah, that too.
Fair enough.
You know what?
That's weirdly enough, point, UPS guy. Still works with them.
UPS is canceled.
You know what? I don't like this guy. All right. Now he's gonna shoot. Took an action to move and 2 actions to shoot his longbow. He's gonna take a hunter's aim. remove soft cover. I don't think there is any anyway.
Nope, no, no cover here. So,
and that is a wonderful roll for a 42.
Jesus. 42. That is
that's a 19 on the die.
That'd be a critical hit, my friend.
Yes.
Fantastic. Crit damage. Go. 41 points of damage.
I don't need to do anything. I just need to stand places.
And he's stuck to the ground again.
And he's stuck to the ground again. Luckily, he's where he wants to be, though. So,
yeah, until Benson, like, leaves. He's like, hey, hold.
He's like, no, wait. Come back.
You weren't supposed to do that.
And he's not immune to anything. So, a lot of... What was that, a one? Yeah, I rolled some ones in that combo, which sucks.
But, all right.
How close is he to the golem, actually?
Close to the golem? Let's see.
Yeah, because it matters 20 just feet. Because...
20 feet.
I need to look for look at this real fast, because I just forgot about it. The electric rune that I have on my thing, if I hit a crit...
Uh-huh.
It creates like a leaping arc.
Whoa.
What?
Okay.
Well, that's cool. Oh my gosh.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I forgot the elemental runes do more stuff in this game than just add damage. They all have crit effects that are really cool.
Yeah, which actually does affect the flaming rune on there. Oh my god. Yeah, because it's fire and electricity that I have on this thing.
Fire.
A weapon is empowered by a flickering flame. The weapon deals an additional 1d6 fire damage on successive strike.
Okay, yeah.
Plus 1d10 persistent fire damage on crit.
Oh my gosh! Whoa. Oh my gosh!
Yes. I knew there was something with this. And shock. On a crit hit, electricity arcs out to deal an equal amount of electricity damage up to two other creatures within 10 feet. Okay.
Ten feet.
Doesn't do that, but he does take persistent fire. So
1d10.
Wow.
1d10. All right.
So at the end of his turn.
Beginning
persistent damage might be one of the most dangerous things in this game.
You take persistent damage at the top of your turn, and then you save for it at the end of your turn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, top of the turn. Gotcha.
Yep.
But that's all he does. Oh, and Vamir is actually... He takes one move action to get in the middle of the door.
Okay.
And he takes another move action, and now it looks like he can probably fly.
And the warehouse, sure. He's big, but the warehouse is big, so.
The golem's big, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, I got a total of 5 foot of
five feet. Bird hops.
He hops. What do you think?
I'll say with the boxes and stuff go up really high, so it'll be hard for him to navigate. So maybe do like half fly speed,
just for
him to navigate it. But yeah,
you'll get there somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. Kezra, it's your turn.
Cool. So something I've kind of always known, because I don't think the rule is that unclear, but it's slightly unambiguous. Slightly ambiguous. when you summon a creature, it acts when you sustain a spell. But I was always kind of unclear on whether the summon would disappear if you don't sustain the spell. If you don't want to use it, and you absolutely do have to sustain your summons every time, or they disappear. The spell ends. Which makes sense. It's like I guess the intent is like you're maintaining the magical link that's holding them here. And they're also increasing your action economy and
it's the equivalent of like an animal companion too. So
yeah, well, animal companions you don't have to command. You can just let them sit there and defend themselves. But summons you have to command them with a spear.
Yeah, yeah.
Good old Grimshaw standing there all worthless. I can't flank with him, so... The drake...
No. I was paralyzed just for my turn, so yeah. I snapped out of my paralysis.
Oh, you did.
Yes. He snaps back to reality.
Mm-hmm.
Oop, there goes gravity.
Oh, there goes a cease and desist.
All right, well then, the drake is going to move down here, right below the golem, so Kezra still has a shot at him. And he'll flank with Grimshaw.
Okay.
And he is going to do some attacking. So one move, and then
He's gonna do his fang attack. Go, Drake Fang. That's a good one. 31 to hit.
Yeah, that's a hit.
Decent hit.
Nice.
All right.
Palpable.
So that will be 12 piercing and 4 fire.
Okay.
That juicy elemental damage. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Yep. 6 right on tap. Okay.
And Kezra will then cast Ray of Frost.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
And totally airball it.
See if you can take it out.
I have max hero points right now, so I have never been maxed out on hero points before. Hoya! I really want to hit this thing. I don't know if this is a hit. It's very close.
Yeah, that's a decent AC. So.
You know what? I have 3 hero points. I'm gonna use it again. 28.
There
wasn't, wasn't a hit, right?
You don't know.
What about a 29?
There we go. All right, that's gonna be a 36.
That
whoa, much better shot that time.
What about a 35?
What do I keep producing until I find out?
Right, so that's 15 frost damage.
All right. And I would like you to roll me 5d10.
Oh, yeah, that's baby. So much fun. That extra damage is so great.
It's so incredible just to hear 5d10. Yeah.
Right? Like, are you sure?
And then one more. Ooh, yes, got 10 on the last one. So 34 ice damage.
Damn,
oh,
nice.
My gosh. 34 points of damage. Incredible.
Wow, you almost did 50 points of damage.
That's huge. All right.
Amazing.
I would like you to please describe your kill.
Fuck yeah.
So the Drake flies across the room and just gashes this thing across the chest. And right as the Drake flies by, this bolt of ice flies out from underneath its wing and just hits it right where the claw struck. And the thing just freezes from the middle and then crumbles into the ground.
Yes!
I like to think, for the sake of when we are recording this episode, Kezra gave it a
it's all ice.
Did they fight any ice enemies in Dragon Ball Z? I can't remember.
Cooler.
Duh, Frieza.
Frieza.
No, he was not ice.
So we died with the exact same place. That's why I'm going to say that.
Freezer. What was it? The no, they fought in the Arctic. That's all I know. When that Drake like does attacks, is it just physical or is there fire with that as well?
Yeah, his fangs. Yeah, fire. His fangs had a fire. He does an additional 1d6 fire damage with his fangs.
Yeah, I was just thinking of like the way he dies too. Is like you just shock, like you know, get it from fire and then like flash freezing it, so it's kind of like this thing and then it just crumbles.
Yeah. All right. Excellent kill. After that, it comes to Benson.
Oh, I'm in this game. I forgot.
You are. You have a lurb in front of you.
He just stands there and looks big. That's his job.
Yeah. All right. I will begin to swing.
Might just kill him.
It actually might just kill him because that was a natural 17 on the die. 4.
Ooh.
36.
That'll hit, bud.
No crit.
No crit.
Wait, what?
How did 37 points of damage?
That was not right. Nope. Hit the wrong button. 37 points of damage.
What a normal hit.
22 points of damage, though.
Wow.
22 points of damage is still enough to kill him. Just
no
kill.
Way.
Okay. This dude runs up, and he's like, I'm about to fight you. And Benson's just like, dude, I'm not even the one you have to worry about. He takes this arrow shot that pins him, and while he's trying to, like, pull it from his leg, Benson just drops the blade right on his neck.
Oh,
just merciless.
It just doesn't look. that's awesome. And then, like, when he dies, the arrow, the secondary effect, persistent fire damage hits, and he just...
the body just...
Lurb.
And Lurb is dead.
Lurb died like a Lurb. Lurb is
dead. The dust settles in the warehouse of the Sunset Imports Emporium. What would you guys like to do?
I'm gonna try to... you said I knew this guy, right?
You do. So let me go over who this guy is. This is Hundi Vosht. I just sent a picture, or I sent it back to you guys. So he's as Irish as you can get. bright red, messy hair with these fantastic bright red mutton chops.
Beautiful mutton chops. Head.
They come up like past his ears, like they're glorious. Beautiful baby blue eyes and these the eyebrows that are just works of art. You know him as he is. He is one of the informants.
One other thing I will say about him is he's got some lips that were meant for kissing.
He looks like a good looking dude.
He looks like handsome Nigel Thornberry.
Yes.
That's a good way to put it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Smaller nose.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yeah.
Handsome.
Did I? Handsome Nigel, there was thick Nigel, now there's
handsome Nigel and thick Nigel.
Wow.
we need one more.
Grimshaw takes his like water flask from his pack and he kind of splashes his face and he's like, Handsome Nigel, are you there? Are you with us?
What's going on? Hey! He wakes up, he freaks out, and I don't know if you untied him, but like he's tied up and literally hogtied, and so he was trying to like worm away from the fight before he got knocked out. By the way, he's played by Christopher O'Dowd. If you know him, he was in the IT Crowd, and for the parents out there, he is the narrator for Puffin Rock. So he just has this wonderfully Irish accent that he has.
What a bunch of bastards!
The bunch of bastards here in Puffin Rock. Those are his two modes.
They turned into a little Conor McGregor.
No, that guy's an asshole. he wakes up, and so you know Hundi as one of the informants for the Bellflower Network. Yeah. So you might have received messages from him. He might have sent you something in a coded script or something like that. But you guys made sure to keep separate so that way you guys didn't endanger each other. But you know who he is. You just don't know exactly what his work is or anything like that.
What happened here? What are you doing here?
Mr. Grimshaw, and he like goes over, he like hugs your leg. He's like, boy, you rescued me, Mr. Grimshaw. Thank you so much. He's like kissing like your greave. Yeah. Oh my goodness!
Splattered greave.
Thank you, but what is happening? Like we were following a lead. Everything that I've known, it pointed to this place, and now, I mean, there's Scarlet Triads here, and you're here. What are you doing here?
Oh, they were torturing me endlessly, Mr. Grimshaw. And as you guys are in the warehouse, he sort of looks around and he realizes that it's only you and like Lurb in here.
Yeah,
and he sees Lurb, but he's just like, did you kill all the others?
What do you mean, the others?
The others. There was a bunch of the other. There was a bunch of the other members in here. They were waiting for the information.
El Kezra, check out the back.
Kezra heads into the back.
Benson's following them. Well, actually, trying to go ahead of him, but.
So you guys
get ahead of you, and then you laugh at me. Like,
what? All right, so you guys take a look around. You don't see evidence of anyone else that's in here. If there is any foot traffic, you assume it to be people working, but you know that's not true since Sunset Imports.
Right.
Or what Sunset Imports has been suffering from, I should say. So you don't see anybody else in here. It looks like it was literally just Kron, the demon, Lurb, and then the stone golem, and then what's her name, Sidrani. It looks like those are the only people that were here.
Benson walks into their break room like, man, they got a snack vending machine and a soda vending machine. This place is way cooler than the Church of Iona Day.
is that a ping pong table? What the hell?
Wait, I have a trick of getting free stuff. And he just like maneuvers. And
he just smashes a male hand through the glass. My special trick is called stealing.
We'll just blame it on the slavers and be done with them.
Right in their blood, slavers were here.
In the top hand corner, it's like property of Sunset Imports. Like, whoops.
Yeah, they also hit the vending machine.
Weird. Well, there's nothing they won't do.
Don't worry about that torture. They stole into Dr. Pepper.
All of them. They will pay.
Yeah, so you guys report back, and he's like, there's no one here.
There was, what you see is who is here. What do you mean others? There were others?
His eyes just go wide, and his mouth drops, and he's like, oh, Dizna, help me. But I've told him everything.
You told him everything?
Oh, I've wrecked the Bellflower Network. They're going after all my friends. They're doomed. They're all doomed. Oh, how horrific. How unthinkable of me. Please save my friends from betrayal. He's like scooting on his knees towards you. Please, the blood will be on my hands if we don't help him right away.
My gosh. Wait, Hundi, right?
Yes.
You're the one who skipped anti-torture training last month.
I said I had a family emergency. It was real.
Oh, my gosh. Well, now we have another emergency.
I know.
Anti-torture.
Resist torture. Here's the secret. You just look at him and go, No.
Like,
you're not going to break my legs? No.
It's like what you do is you bite the back fake tooth in the back of your mouth, and that will solve it.
And then as your mouth foams, you say Hail Hydra or something?
No. As the poison takes hold, you go Pog Champ.
Actually, a funny thing, I think that is a item in Pathfinder. I think there's like a fake tooth or something.
Like a cyanide tooth kind of thing?
I think there's something. I might be misremembering from a different game.
That sounds familiar.
It would be cool if you had like the thing from Dune where he cracked his tooth and he spit out the poison. Like, that would be cool.
Sounds like a Delta Remember Green thing.
That does sound like a Delta Green thing.
Remember the tooth.
Yeah, how hurt is everybody?
I'm pretty good.
It's a good question, because I know Grimshaw got beat up there.
Yeah, Grimshaw's not doing great.
Well, if you want, you guys can take some time to drink potions and heal up and stuff like that.
Wasn't Sunset Imports known for like their distribution and transfer of like health potions?
Isn't there a 50-gallon drum of health potion over here?
We opened a crate. There's 50 major healing potions.
50 major healing potions.
Yeah, let me just do a perception check.
That's only worth.
But you're morally obligated to only take what you need.
but I want to steal.
No, so. I knew you guys have some healing potions already, but you know, feel free to do whatever healing you guys have, gloves or whatever. While we do that, did you guys want to loot the place?
Yeah, we're definitely checking things out. I think I'm probably tending to Hundi because he was tortured. So
yes. You find that there are some marks on him, and you find a. Not too recently, red hot fire poker that it looks like they were heating up in a brazier and then poking him with it.
Does it at least make like a cool pattern, or is it just like random?
No, that's the worst part. Probably dumb.
You know, this isn't too bad idea. I think you might be able to line up to a couple constellations.
Nope. Just gonna wear long sleeve shirts from now on. Long sleeve shirts.
They burned the Dim logo into his arm. I'm like, shit.
I'll never get out of the 2000s.
It's like, we know a guy that worships Zangkuthan. We could easily arrange for something better.
I have a friend for you. Alright, so. Let's see. If you guys are looking around in this place, you find. So if you go to the secure corner, which is that like blocked off area that like that they were torturing him in. Mm-hmm. Let me read the room for that. Large slats of wood, iron chests, and stout barrels stacked here shelter the southeast corner of the warehouse from view. Several manacles hang from the wooden slats several feet above the floor. So it looks like he was hung here by his feet or something like that while they were poking him. So it's bad. It's however bad you can imagine, that's what it is. But if you look around in this place, you find a few things. Let's see. Let's go down here to... you find a runestone that I'll just tell you right now, because it looks pretty familiar, is a +2 weapon potency runestone.
Oh, ooh, yeah.
Good shit.
You also find another runestone that looks to be shadowy in a way. It would be affixed to armor, so if you roll Arcana for that, and an iron medallion.
Ooh.
Can I do religion for the medallion?
Let me see what it's under. So the iron medallion is a talisman. I'll tell you that.
Single use. Okay.
Magical talisman. Yeah, I guess you could. I don't really see anything against that.
Okay.
Crafting and Arcana are definitely going to be the things. So Kesra probably have that.
Oh, I have crafting as well.
So. Oh, okay.
I got a 35 crafting.
Yep. That's good for the whole thing. Okay, so I'll do the Iron Medallion since I was just talking about it. It's just called an Iron Medallion. I know.
Damn.
I love names like that because then I don't have to hide it. Iron Medallion, item level 10.
Oh.
It is a free action concentrate to activate. The trigger is you attempt to will save against a fear effect but haven't rolled yet. Okay. This small medallion is shaped like a shield. When you activate it, you gain a +2 status bonus to the triggering save and other saves against you against fear for 1 minute.
That's pretty solid.
Oh, for a minute?
For a minute.
Yeah, that's actually
so
quicker.
This is a talisman that goes for a whole fight, pretty much. On the triggering save, if the outcome of your roll is a failure, you gain a success instead. If the outcome is a critical failure, you gain a regular failure instead.
Nice.
So it's impossible to crit fail while you have this.
Yeah, so, that's quite good.
Yeah. So fear effects are going to be, well, for at least one time, is something you don't have to worry about. And then the... let's see.
The shadowy rune?
Yeah, it's a shadowy rune.
Imagine stealth.
Maybe.
Allows you to cast Shadow Blast.
Shadow Blast!
You mean to roll again, or...?
No, you're fine. No, I'm trying to find it in their list that I have now. Ah, there it is. Alright, so this is a Shadow Runestone Greater. Item level 9. Armor etched with this rune takes on a hazy black appearance. You get a +2 item bonus to stealth checks while wearing this armor.
Oh, shit.
Yep.
I want that.
So, +2 item bonus to stealth checks.
Nice.
And it makes your armor look cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just makes you do, like, the wavering effect, like, whenever, Blackbeard did, like...
Yeah,
smoky effect or something.
Who's getting that +2 weapon rune?
I think Vamir should get it.
For his talents.
No, for the blocking area.
Give him gloves. give him armor gauntlets.
I have a +1 dagger I've never used. That would be a really nice +2 dagger.
That's a solid argument. I can't.
He uses the.
I mean, it's decided.
The +2 dagger to cut apples or, you know, stuff for dinner.
The most even.
That's it really good, though.
Most evenly sliced apples you'll ever have.
Well, the butter was spread perfectly.
Dude, just check out how I can dice these chives.
It's like, I hate to say it, but I feel like it would be more useful in Benson's hands because of his reaction, which is retributive strike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's going to be attacking more often, too.
He has
yeah.
a lot more chances.
So maybe you want to slide that Shadow Rune over to Grimshaw?
I can live with that.
Oh, all right.
Tim's like, oh, it worked.
I mean, he's getting a +2 potency rune to his weapon. So,
I mean, thematically, I thought that would be really good on Benson, but I'll take a. I'll take the +2 potency rune. You can talk me into it.
So there's one more item that I don't want you to. Before you start divvying stuff out,
okay.
You find a tiny. It's an emerald grasshopper that it is a, well, I can tell you right now, it's a,
it's a useless tchotchke that people put on their cupboards.
That's not true. It's a talisman. I'm just telling you that right now. So it's a talisman. But yeah, it's a little emerald grasshopper figure.
The Grimshaw looks at it and he's like, I guess we could sell it. I don't know. What do you guys think of it?
Throw in the garbage.
Jake's like breaking inside. First. Have you ever had a party just reject treasure before, Jake?
Reject really cool treasure?
Stupid thing.
What's... Do you have to re-roll a check for this?
I got 25 crafting. Not as good 25. This time.
Oh, yeah. Crafting? That's fine. Item level 5, so it's easy. One action, concentrate to use. Requirements, you are trained in athletics, which all of you are. This metal grasshopper, studded with emeralds, is usually clasped to the legs of a suit of armor.
Mm.
When you activate it, make a leap, traveling up to 40 feet horizontally and up to 10 feet vertically.
What?
What?
That's fantastic. Oh my.
But get this. If you don't end your jump on solid ground, you flutter in the air until the end of your turn, then fall harmlessly at a rate of 60 feet per round until you reach the ground.
No right. way.
That's actually good.
I gotta see Benson do this.
So stealthy Benson, leaping silently through the sky, making no sound upon re-entry.
And then Misty stepping up higher into the air just to flex. Or not Misty step, Dimension Dooring up.
Yeah. Oh my gosh!
But yeah, no. So it acts as like a massive jump spell or whatever on top of a feather fall. Like you just, it doesn't say that you like. There's no like maximum to how much you can fall with this either. It's literally just 60 feet per round until you reach the ground.
I feel like this is like one of those items that if you could like find a reliable source for it, like a town that just has them like. To buy,
give me 50.
Yeah, like, your character should always have one.
Yeah.
like that's so good.
The one merchant from Tianjia that makes these only.
Yeah.
I don't sell anything except these little cricket figurines.
Just grab them and go. Hey, you make these for us now.
So yeah, you find that too. You also find. Tucked among the worthless materials in this hall. This is in the hall up above. Is a long forgotten treasure, an emerald grasshopper, and an exquisite silk drawstring pouch. The pouch is worth 25 gold pieces.
Whoa!
Yeah,
it's a nice little pouch.
Does it say Gucci?
Yes. Yeah. It says Gucci and then Louis Vuitton string drawstring on it.
Dude, is that porpoise leather?
That explains it. It's actually made of raw unicorn.
Raw unicorn. Didn't even tan it.
No, didn't
it's
even
iguana tan scales.
All right, I think we've found everything we're going to find in here.
So, at some point, when everybody was healing up, divvying out these items, Kezra like snuck away, and you guys see him eventually over by Lurb. And he found like a big white just a piece of white canvas, and he has the manacles that they were using. Mm. And
oh yeah, yep.
He's drawing something with Lurb's blood on the canvas.
Hey, buddy, what you doing?
What you doing, pal?
No, let him cook. I want to use.
And when you go over, he's drawn in blood on this white canvas the symbol of the Scarlet Triad, which is like an upside down triangle with like a circle in it, and then sort of like a three-pointed crown. It's a pretty cool looking symbol, honestly. But he wants everybody to know who this is. And he's
not as cool as a briar with blood dripping on it.
And he manacles up Lurb and just drags him outside to the north.
I'm just thinking of Amir is following him, like pecking as soon as the right. body moves. Just
right.
Come on. Yeah, he's like, no, that's dinner. Stop.
Yeah, I think Grimshaw's definitely kind of following in it with intrigue. Like, you literally didn't respond to, like, oh, what you doing? You just, like, kept doing your thing. So he's just like, all right, I'm just going to see what happens.
Best so he
like,
yeah, does this.
Kind of falls.
So yeah, he...
He's like, ooh, what's going on?
So he drags him out of the north door and walks out onto the dock and looks over the river. And he, like, he summons his dragon claw and he just slashes through this flag and ties it around Lurb. And then you see just like this burst of lightning and these giant blue dragon wings just shoot out of his back.
What?
And he grabs he grabs the manacles and just flies off with Lurb across the water towards the great keep on the other side. And he flies across with Lurb with this like desecrated scarlet triad flag whipping, and you see him just hang Lurb from the tower on the other side so the whole city could see this burned up, charred up, fucked up Scarlet Triad member and this flag that is just slashed. And then he just flies back over and lands right on the dock.
And you did the predator pose.
How could he do this? What the bloody hell could he do that?
Kind of holding out on us, huh? But, yeah, Benson doesn't really have anything to say to that.
No, it's honestly something Elkwood would have done if Kesra didn't. Like, at this point, just start hanging the bodies and be like, you know what? Fuck these guys.
Yeah, let's hang some bodies. It's a nice day for that.
Well, I mean, like, especially if you got these slavers coming in, they're starting up shit. They don't deserve anything better.
He walks over. His wings kind of like fizzle out in a bunch of sparks of lightning, and he walks over to handsome Nigel and just like puts a hand on his shoulder, and then he looks to Grimshaw and he goes, "Let's go kill every last one of them in this city."
Let's do it.
Yeah.
I like to think while he was flying up with the corpse and the flag, Elkwood was ripping a sick guitar solo, Benson was rep backing him up, and Grimshaw was just like doing a metal scream into a microphone.
Yeah, for that moment during that interlude, it's like the sky is like thundering, yes. Lightning is raining.
Yeah.
We're covering Megadeth in the background.
I mean that was fucking metal.
Oh my gosh.
Get here.
So he already got one today.
What about second here?
So I will say that after that happens, and you guys are like, all right, let's go. When you go over to Hundy and you make a show of that, he while like freaked out at first, he realized he is dealing with powers far stronger than him, and is kind of like, okay, it's crazy, but I feel confident now. After seeing a display like that.
Yeah.
Also, good guys. You immediately hear warning bells and stuff as a dragon person just, like, hung a body on top of the castle.
And so, yeah, that happens every year.
Ding, ding, ding. And you see some guards mobilizing, so you're like, we should leave.
I like the guards are looking, they're like, how the fuck are we going to get that down?
Wait, those ringing bells would make a sick backing track for our next track. Come on!
I've heard Hell's Bells by AC/DC. This is perfect. Yeah.
All right, so just do a little bit of bookkeeping. I had one focus point left, so I spent that focus point and healed myself. I refocused, got another focus point, and I spent that focus point and healed myself. And if possible, I'd like to refocus one more time.
Well, how much healing do you need?
I got healing gloves.
You got healing gloves?
I do too.
Yeah, we
need
healing gloves.
I need 25 more, so a healing glove would probably be good.
Because I don't have battle medicine, so
it's 3d8, right? Well, or something like that. It's
2d6 plus 7? Ooh. Or 3d6 plus 7?
It's something like that. We can never remember.
It's good. I rolled because I roll with nature as I took a feat for this.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So I rolled, that was a natural 18, so that's a 31.
Oh my gosh.
So that should be
solid
a crit.
Yeah,
solid,
that's a solid crit. Yeah.
I don't know what the actual numbers are supposed to be. I think it's like, 48 at that point?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, so let's see what it is before saying how much it actually, I heal for.
Because I couldn't roll four ones. I probably don't need to waste my thing now.
Well, that's what I'm just saying. Yeah, like, what we got here first. So, 48, 17 points.
You know, I feel like that's close enough.
Yeah.
And so, we still have a healer's gloves in the pocket.
Yep.
Yeah. So, kind of like how Elkwood just goes up to him, and it's got all these, I don't know, more cuts and stuff, but he just goes in to pouch stuff from the Mwangi. Like, it's probably some herbs that he took from the Yukaje, and he just kind of crushes them up and just, like, grinds them into, like, one of the wounds. At first, it's painful, and then kind of numbs.
Just slowly pours that hot chili oil in. It's gonna be okay.
Okay, it kills bacteria.
Alright. Okay.
But then numbs up, and then it feels like icy hot. It's like, ooh.
Okay, alright.
Everything. I feel like I could bank some three-pointers now.
All right, so Hundi, he as you guys are like doing this, he has like a brain blast moment, and he's just like, wait, we need to go to Kite Hill.
Why don't we go there,
Mr. Grimshaw? You know this. We send messages through the kites on bright sunny days like today.
I missed kite training last month.
Right, because you had a family emergency, didn't you?
Oh, so that's
a real one.
Now that feels, you dumb idiot.
So
I had a baseball game explained. To go
to. It was my son's baseball game. Championship match. He lost.
I've definitely called out of work to play D&D, so I have no leg to stand on here. Hundi explains that the way that they one of the ways that they communicate is because Kite Hill is to the north and it's higher above like the gate of Kintargo,
mm-hmm.
that they can actually communicate with kites to other members of the Bellflower Network, and they can do it pretty secretly and pretty stealthily because of the fact that it's just people flying kites.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's families up there, there's kids up there. Like nobody's really going to assume anything. So you guys go to. So he orders you guys to go to Kite Hill.
Let's go. Not a moment to lose.
Let me get you over to the map so you guys can see where you are from and where you are going.
We are titans on this map.
Yes, you're very, very large tokens.
We could crush them all.
They look like ants all the way down here. It's because they are ants, Elkwood.
We are gods among men.
We could rule them like gods. Angry gods.
Angry gods. What's that from? What's
Adventure
that from?
Time. Adventure Time.
Adventure Time.
Oh, duh.
Yeah, jeez, Tim.
Oh, my gosh.
Shake the dog.
I blame it on the lack of sleep.
It's all that lead paint you've been drinking.
We tell you to stop, and do you?
I can stop anytime.
But it tastes like prime, guys.
Isn't that one of the reasons, like with lead paint, they said it's a big issue around kids because the paint's actually sweet?
Yeah, it tastes good.
Oh.
Yeah. What idiot made that decision?
What?
Yeah, I know. Well,
it's the same with antifreeze.
They have to put a bittering agent in antifreeze because otherwise it'll taste too good.
It tastes weirdly sweet.
Guys, like my next Patrick big run through is making razor blades taste like Skittles.
It's like that one episode
of one in honey.
That one St. Patrick's Day episode of Always Sunny where Charlie was like reenacting the Reservoir Dog scene. The guy dresses a leprechaun in the basement.
Yeah, I remember that.
Oh my gosh.
And
I think we caught ourselves a leprechaun.
Charlie, are you drinking paint again? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh my god. All right. So you guys are at Sunset Imports here. You can see that Sunset Imports is directly on the opening of the mouth of the Yolobulus River.
Right.
So anybody coming in from the north, if they go into the shipping yard here, that is the first building on the left. Mm. That is the first dock on the left. So you can see why they were so popular. Kite Hill is way over yonder, on the northeast, beyond the Cantargo walls. So you would have to go up Knight Road, which is actually where you came from. That's actually the road you came down, because it goes up to Cypress Point. And so you go out that way, and then you just make a right, and then you're up on Kite Hill.
Guys, let's just get an Uber.
You can do that.
I don't have the app.
Damn it.
Do you Venmo? You can just Venmo me, and I'll download them.
I'll Venmo some gold pieces over.
I'm not waiting for the bus, okay?
Public transportation in this city.
It doesn't run on Sundays.
God, it's like Chick-fil-A. This sucks. All right.
So, as you all go to approach Kite Hill, let me read out... This little description here, because this is kind of cool. Kite Hill rises just north of the Greens, Cantargo's noble district. Kite flying is popular here due to the prevalence of ocean breezes, a tradition the Bellflower Network has encouraged for their own subtle gain. As the kites flown high on Kite Hill are visible from nearly anywhere in Cantargo, Bellflower agents can deliver secret messages across the city with a coded combination of kite colors and specific movements. As you walk up, you see a halfling woman who looks like... Let me get a picture of her. She looks like this.
Oh, what a sweet lady.
Mm. She has a nice smile.
She's very sweet. She's got this nice like dusty blonde hair, like mousy blonde hair. Her massive ears stick out from behind her ear, from behind her hair, and she's just got this smirk and these like very pretty green eyes. She's got overalls on, nice fitted overalls, she's just sitting behind like a little stand, and you can see she's got kites behind her and stuff.
Big old Stanley Cup in her hand.
Yeah. they took out all the lead. I got one of the good ones. So as you, yeah, remember that they have lead in there. Yep. That's why it tastes so good.
That's why everybody wants them.
That makes my water taste better. As you walk up, she kind of waves you guys over, and she clearly sees Hundi with you, even though he's hiding behind your legs out of shame. Mm. And she goes, "You lot look like you could do some kite flying," says the halfling proprietor of the makeshift stall. With a cheerful voice, she asks, "Which one strikes your fancy?" As she gestures to the many kites hanging in the simple frame of the stall.
Strange thing to say to two fully armored knights, but okay.
"Oh, anybody can fly a kite. I've got a few butterflies left, a couple of boxes, plenty of classic diamonds. I have orange, chartreuse, crimson, violet, coral, yellow. Pick any. They're free. Help us protect against the drab Nidalese diplomats infiltrating our beloved Cantargo by showing them all the colors the sky can hold. I can help you make your choice and get you up and flying if you've never flown before," as she puts a hard wink towards Grimshaw, knowing who you are.
Yeah, so Grimshaw kind of like makes a motion like, okay, I'm gonna go up and talk to them. So he goes up, he's like, "Good day, yes, I agree that we do need to put more color into the sky. Like you said, could send a message. Maybe not just to the Nidalese diplomats, if you catch my drift."
"Oi, I assume you're," she looks down and looks at Hundi. "I assume you're sending a specific message there, Hundi." And Hundi kind of looks up, he's just like, Yeah, I am, yeah. "And what kind of message are we sending today?"
Grimshaw, he like kind of looks around, because he's just like, in his mind, this like he's so paranoid. This girl triad is everywhere. and he does double speak, and he says,
The flowers need to be scattered to the four winds. The soil is no longer a good place for them to be held.
So she gets that, and what that would pretty much mean to her in this story is that, like, the Hundi would have communicated this to you, is that, like, the communicating to the Velfar network via this, the message is pretty much like, you need to get to safety. And so she just goes, I understand. Name's Nolly, by the way, for those who don't know. I see you're, I see you saved Hundi from something here. But he's a brave man and a good friend, so I appreciate you doing that. I've heard rumors of the Scarlet Triad, but they've been devilishly difficult to pin down. Knowing what you've learned about them is enough for me. We've got to get the word out to them so the network can be ready. And she immediately spins her little stool around. Woo! And in one swift grab, she grabs a set of red diamond kites and purple box kites. And then she begins to explain the plan. We use the kites to send messages sometimes, since the whole city can see them on a clear day like today. And of course, fine details aren't something you can convey with kites. We can get enough of a warning out like this. We'll put out a combination of red triangular kites to represent the Scarlet Triad. And we'll use some purple box kites to represent the Bellflower Network safe houses. Once they're in the air, we'll need to guide the red kites to smash into the purple ones. Anyone in the network won't realize at first who the red kites are meant to represent, but they'll all know that our safe houses in Kintargo are in danger, as purple box kites get attacked time and time again. Our agents know to scatter and hide, and hopefully we'll be able to deal with the Scarlet Triad villains afterwards.
That sounds like a good plan. They've been appearing everywhere. The Crimson Buyer, compromised. Sunset Imports, compromised. Every pillar of our city just seems to be crumbling and falling. And tell me, the Bellflower Network, do you think there's anyone on the inside there too?
No, I don't think so. I implicitly trust every single one of my men.
I like to think we're going to get them all lined up. It's going to be all these halflings and one regular human just like, What's the Bellflower business to get up to? Am I right, my fellow halfling?
He's like, he doesn't look like a halfling. Oh, gross spurt.
No, he's doing that thing where you put your shoes on your knees and you walk.
Oh my god. Oh,
don't, but his performance check is so high. He's just constantly.
Yeah. They always send the bards.
So, something fun. There is a Bellflower Tiller archetype in this book. So if one of you perish, you could easily just, you know, come back. Your next character
that's actually
could be
so
a Bellflower
cool,
Tiller.
Yeah.
Come back as a little halfling.
Yeah. So I'll give you the story behind. I won't go into the mechanics of it, but Bellflower Tillers handle most of the ground-level efforts of freeing slaves and escorting them to safety.
Nice.
They use farm-related code words to hide their work. A tiller's freed slaves are her crop, quote, which she moves along secretive paths termed rows, taking shelter in secret hideouts referred to as barns.
Ah.
It's a really, really cool thing to do. I don't know. I love the flavor behind it, especially in Kintargo, where, you know, there's like, we're still recovering from this, clearly. So let's get back to Kite Hill. So in Kite Hill, in order to send a message, getting kites in the air, it will take a... It's easy enough. Let me say this. I'll tell you the DC, and what I want you guys to do is, it's going to be an acrobatics check.
Yes.
Okay. I'm sure Mark was going to be fine. So it's going to be an acrobatics check, and the acrobatics check is a DC 20.
Okay.
Okay.
Mark's like now, auto success.
Spoiler alert!
Here, just give me like I have. Just give me 2. Kites and I can do it.
Yeah. So what I want you guys to do though is I want you guys to she's going to be helping you guys out. Clearly, when like Elkwood gets us up, she's just like, oh, like you're fine. But like I want you guys to sort of like explain, do your role, don't say anything, and then role play it out.
Mm.
Okay.
All right.
So go ahead and make your rolls, and then whoever wants to say first, just know that, like, Hundi and Nolly Peltry are there to help you.
So Benson gets the kite in the air for about 5 seconds, and then the string gets caught on, like, one of his finger pauldrons, gets cut, and the thing flies away.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, that's a different message.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
It means trust all the tall people. Fuck! That was a 4 on the die for Benson with acrobatics plus 0, so...
Ooh. Okay, so, yep, yeah, all right.
Never stood a chance.
No, didn't.
We didn't.
Sit here.
Hey, he stood a 1 in 20 chance, okay? 1 in 20.
And I guess that natural 20 would be fine.
Right. And so Grimshaw, he's taking one of the red kites, obviously. And he unfurls it. It looks like he's struggling a little bit to get into the air, but once he gets it into the air, he's good to go. He's just flying as it should with a 22.
22, nice. Mm-hmm. Okay, so she helps you out. Not only helps you out a little bit,
yeah.
But like when once it grabs the air, you got it. Like, yeah. You're like, oh yeah, I, yeah. You might have done this before. So,
mm-hmm. He just missed kite training last month.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's kind of like one of those things at work where every 2 years you gotta do certification training.
Yeah, yeah. You need to renew your license. All right, who next?
Yeah, Elk. Like, as soon as he gets it in his hand, like, because it was what, the box, the red ones and the, was it the
purple
ones?
Yes, it was red diamonds and purple boxes.
Yeah, the purple box. Like, as soon as he, like, it kind of, like, the string touches his finger, he kind of, like, wraps it around partially, and it kind of comes very fluidly and just kind of goes in, because with a 11 on the die, he gets a 31.
Wow.
So he just throws it up. And the wind catches it perfectly and just takes it. And he braces for a moment, but arguably just takes it. Like, it's not any issue. God, now he really wants to go back to the UKJ Elves and break dance now.
Benson walks over and is like, hey, Elk, it doesn't look like you're very good at that. You want some help?
Oh, no, my finger. And he just cuts it and goes away.
Man, just walks around with that, like, thing kicking dandelions because he's bored.
Benson goes to each string, goes, wow, looks like you suck at this, and just cuts the string.
He's up to a child, full long sword out, and just cuts it like, you suck at this, I don't.
Kezra gets his kite, and he's feeling good about this thing. He got a cool 29.
Mm.
Ooh! Oh, there you go.
He's just vibing out on this hill.
Yeah. So with Nolly helping you guys, that'll actually be 2 critical successes, 1 regular success, and then John's failure. This is all story though. So I want to do something here where there is something about flying a kite that brings absolute childlike joy, and it's. It can't be understated. Like, you are around families. There are kids out here. There are, like, you know, old couples out here that are just, like, spending time together. And there's just this, like, overwhelming sense of joy that you guys feel flying these kites on this beautiful day, even with the task that you're given and, like, the severity behind it. How do you think your characters are feeling with this, like, what feelings are they kind of going through in these moments?
Yeah, Grimshaw, he's, this isn't the first time that he has flown, kites before. I feel like in Galarian, you know, there's, unless you're living in the, you know, where all that super tech is, or unless you're living in a really magic heavy, you know, community. I feel like, you know, it's kind of one of the common games of children. And Grimshaw, he's you know, just, you know, swishing his kite around, you know, making the, you know, go hit another, you know, corresponding color. And he's just kind of got the motion down, so he's not really, like, kind of paying attention to the sky. And he's just, like, surveying the field because, you know, even he was starting to lose himself in, like, this kind of, oh, it's a little fun activity. But then, like, the paranoia just keeps coming back, and it's always, like, lurking in the back of his head. And then he is, like, scanning. And then he sees these two brothers playing with a kite. And, like, instantly, like, he just, like, hones in on them. The paranoia just kind of, like, shuts off for a second. And he is just watching these two brothers just, like, pass the string back and forth. One's like, no, you're doing it wrong. Like, no, you see they, like, tussle a little bit, like, fight over it.
As brothers do, yeah.
And suddenly the scene shifts from one of Kite Hill in the brightly colored kites in the sky. And the two boys are replaced with another couple of boys who maybe don't look as nicely clothed. Their clothes are drab, a little raggedy. You can tell that they kind of like live on the street. But they have this kite, this black kite, box kite in the air. You can see their patches, different grays that are, you know, patching it up. And this little boy is like, Grimshaw, no, you're doing it wrong. And you see the older brother is like, no, I've got it. And the kite is like, he's like fumbling with the string. It got caught around a finger. He's trying to untie it. And as he's untying it to kind of straighten it out, it looks like it's going to fall. Like just the wind's going to take it away. And the little boy just kind of like jumps off of like a nearby rock and snatches the string out of the air. And he's like, oh, Grimshaw, you were never really good at this. That's why you let me do it. And Grimshaw just like looks down at this like younger brother, like slightly embarrassed, like, it was your turn anyways. I was just giving you your turn. And the little boy, Scrimshaw, is like, all right. And it's just, you know, then on it's just Grimshaw, he just kind of plops his butt down on the rock and watches his little brother play with this drab kite in a gray sky in Nidal. And then he's suddenly sucked back into the moment, and he's just like, what am I doing? And he just continues to survey the field, the paranoia right back
into it.
And it's kind of like with Elk, he's flying this kite, and he kind of gets sucked into kind of like an old memory he had when he was living in Absalom. And in the most districts of Absalom, there's some nice areas and there's some shady areas. He belonged to the Puddles, which was where a lot of the poorer folks lived and constantly flooded. And so it was like a whole bunch of trudging through like ankle to like knee deep water sometimes if the tide rolled in to get to your house and whatnot. But flying this, he is reminded of a memory of sitting on top of one of the shanty buildings and with his mother, and it's like they're flying the kite and stuff, and she's gently guiding his hand along the string. Just to pull it back at times, like, you know, the wind catches it, they yank it back, so it kind of like makes a twist or a turn. And it's kind of like he kind of relives that moment, and a kind of a smile is brought to his face for a thought, and then he turns, and then her face is just not there. It's just kind of like a blankness, and he kind of looks back up, and it's like the seagulls start, the sound of it, they start calling. And then he snapped back because he feels something's wrong. constantly at this point. It's kind of like that moment of childlike wonder has been kind of knocked out of him a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's kind of like, he returns to the moment, but for that split, for that minute, he's just kind of like enjoying it. But knows there's something serious that needs to be done.
Yeah, Kezra is brought back to his time back in Thuvia in the sandy port city of Mirab. And it's a younger Kezra. And he's walking through the city with a young girl, his daughter Lana. And she has scolded him because she's not supposed to go off with him. And her mother doesn't want him taking her and getting her into trouble. But she can't help herself but play along because Kezra's got these two big rolled up pieces of canvas and these two sleds with feet strapped on them. And he's taking her to outside the city walls, out into the dunes. It was a hot, steamy day in the city, but out on the dunes, once you get away, the winds start to pick up and you just get this really warm but peaceful breeze. And Kezra lays out the canvas and there's like two handles that are attached with strings to the canvas. And he straps his feet in, straps Lana's feet in, and he teaches her how to windsurf on the dunes on this breezy day to just escape the hot city and get away for a little bit. And he spends the whole afternoon just coasting around the outskirts of the city on these dunes on this nice, breezy, hot desert day. And he's just back on the hill. His eyes are closed. You guys see him. You're like, this is the most peaceful you've seen Kezra in a while.
Oh.
I think Benson is looking around at everybody, and he's a little frustrated that he was not able to help with the flying of the kite, and he's kind of going through it in his head, all these things he could have done differently or done better. But then he feels somewhat disturbed by the fact that earlier in the day he essentially butchered a man without feeling anything. Like, he feels bad about not flying a kite, but he feels nothing for all of the things that he's done. And there's no real, like, he has no family association for an activity like this. He feels so out of place. He doesn't really know what to feel in this moment.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some of the stuff is, like, confusing because the fact is that, like, while you see all the joy happening around you, and obviously you, like, feel that, and, you know, you kind of empathize with that, is that, like, you know, what your characters might be feeling in this moment is that, like, either you had it and now you don't have it anymore, and so you have this sort of longing for it, or you, I think there's a certain word for this, but it's longing for something you never had. Mm-hmm. And so you have this, like, empty nostalgia, you know what I mean? And so there's like, this unexplainable feeling. But it's a beautiful day. You're flying kites out. Even with the tragedy that's, like, you know, unfolding in Kintargo, there's something joyous about today. That is until suddenly, in the middle of you guys flying kites on the top of Kite Hill, whomp! A massive creature appears.
You had to ruin the kites.
Oh boy.
I know, right?
Good job, Jake.
We can't even have an afternoon.
I know. As this creature appears in the center of Kite Hill.
With that many legs, he could hold so many kites.
He could. So this creature is blue insectoid-like creature, and it has gold bangles on the end of its legs and arms. It's got this, like, almost praying mantis like visage, but it's all blue, and it has a massive ice spear in its hands.
Ooh.
And as it appears, it holds it up above its head, and it says, "For the glory of Nidal."
Oh, good.
I'll see you guys next time.
Oh, that's not peaceful at all.
I feel like I recognize this thing, but I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah, I feel like Grimshaw, you accent lets go of his kite, and he's like, come on!
I just want 1 second.
Hey everyone, Jake the GM here to remind you to follow us on all of our socials to stay up to date with DPS content and Pathfinder related news. If you want more DPS content, check our Twitch and YouTube channels as well as our Discord and subreddit for episode discussions and lots of memes. See you in the next episode.